You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 28 May. Tomorrow we vote. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Alex Dace, the Tiger Brands results. There was a lot of ouch in there. We're going to be chatting with Teresa. The recent results, PGMs, of course, but copper, really, sorry, chrome, really booming in that regard. And then Renzo Mkunzi from Future Growth Asset Management. We have central bankers galore over the next couple of weeks, five of them on rate decisions, starting with the MPC on Thursday. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Pick and Pay will shut 1 in 10 corporate supermarkets. Group broke its relationship with the consumer, says CEO Sean Summers. That's exactly what went wrong. Business Day, Barloworld holding thumbs for a post-election uptick. Interim results slip as industrial conglomerates business in SA face challenging trading conditions. Morning markets. The US was closed yesterday, as was the UK. Over in the east, mostly green. Sydney, the exception of 0.4%. Tokyo up 0.3%. Hong Kong up 0.4%. And Tencent up 1.8%. Commodities green across the board. Gold, $2,375. Brent, $83.30. Platinum, $1,067. Palladium, $1,003 per ounce. Rand is $18.35. Bitcoin, $68,200. And top 40 opening call, about 190 points, a quarter of a percent higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Alex Dace from Thimble Wealth. Alex, appreciate the early morning. Those Tiger Brand numbers, as I said, I mean, the revenue ultimately only down by 1%, but they're seeing price inflation, but perhaps bigger, reduction in volumes of 9%. Restructuring, but still tough. I got to say, I thought we might have seen slightly better with food inflation coming back, but the answer seems to be no.
Morning, Simon. Yes, the Tiger Brands results obviously very, very poor. And I guess this also represents that there's a lot of internal end goals being scored as well as the weak consumer out there. So we all know the consumer's under pressure. Affordability is a crisis. And as a result, that reduces the demand and the volumes for some of these iconic brands like they have, like All Gold and so forth. Mm. But in the case of Tiger Brands, they have been, I would say, poorly managed for, you know, at least a decade, and hasn't really invested enough into the business. And I think that's what the new management really said in this meeting, in this presentation. Mm. You know, to really highlight some of the problems that they had in the business and what they'll have to do in order to fix it. So I think that was a good part of it. But I think the extent of the problems is probably even worse than the market initially thought. So obviously the complexity as well in the business needs to be reduced, meaning they're going to reduce the amount of SKUs, they also reduce the seasonality and mm-hmm. the working capital. They need to invest in the manufacturing side of things so they can be more efficient, so they can actually supply these products to the customers at a cheaper price. And hopefully over time, as the economy recovers, volumes can then also push up. So I think there's a lot of work in there. Specifically the grains business, the milling and baking, those numbers are a lot worse than anticipated. And especially if you compare that to margins, call it 10, 15 years ago, it is a shadow of what it used to be. So it shows you that the extent of the work that needs to be done for Tiger Brands. But I think they are, you know, obviously they've started the journey now, and time will tell if they can actually execute it. And in a way, quite similar to Pick and Pay, you know, a business has lost its way and now needs a complete turnaround.
That's a great point. I like the analogy with Pick and Pay. And I said in the intro there that Sean Summers says that they had in many ways broken its relationship with the customer. And of course, Pick and Pay used to be all about the champion of the consumer. Tiger Brands was the champion of brands. And I can't help suspect Tiger Brands probably also slightly got squeezed by some of the retailers, such as Pick and Pay, but certainly ShopRite, who are constantly going back to their suppliers and saying, we need better prices.
Yes, look, remember the market is dynamic. You need to keep changing, evolve, be innovative. If you don't do that, the competitors will eat your lunch. And I think that's what happens with Tiger Brands over time.
And then I contrast it also with AVI, who've managed to kind of hang on to particularly their margins. And that is what AVI perhaps is best known for, is they've, I suppose the stark contrast is between them and Tiger Brands shows just how much Tiger Brands has lost their way, as AVI's to a degree managed to hold margins, although volume's still under pressure.
So AVI has always been seen as the benchmark when it comes to management. So they've had a very, very strict cost discipline there, excellent capital allocation record, and just general managing the economic troughs which we have over the last 10 or so years much better. And of course, Tiger Brands hasn't done that. They have lost market share, they've lost efficiency, and they haven't spent enough money on the capex. And that makes it more difficult to produce like you used to do in the past.
Yeah, and we go back to the point you made up front, a lot of own goals and consumers under pressure, both of those hurting Tiger Brands. Alex Dace and Thumba Wealth, always appreciate the early morning insights.
If seagulls were hardy-dars who could afford to retire to the coast, what kind of bird would you be? Would you soar over the savannah or chase summer around the globe? You see, even when you stop working, your money won't. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Telling now with Phoevos Barola, CEO of Theresa, 6 months ending March, saw revenue up 10.1%, but HEPS off 25% as PGM prices come under pressure. Phoevos, I want to start with chrome, because that really is the silver lining and relatively new for yourselves and the business. But you're mining it efficiently and you're getting really good prices. And truthfully, prices have continued higher even post the period end.
Yes, good morning, Simon. Yeah, so chrome is one of our bulk products that we produce. So we've always been a co-producer of platinum group metals and chrome concentrates. But I think, you know, the higher prices that we've seen over the last 18 months have really sort of sparked attention and interest from the market, trying to understand the fundamentals of what's driving ultimately stainless steel demand. And we need to look to China and Asia when we see capacity increases and production increases. And it's pretty contrarian to what we're seeing in terms of global growth statistics. And it's we call a balanced market where supply is just meeting physical demand and hence elevated prices. And we monitor inventories in China. And one mustn't forget that South Africa accounts for 85% of global chrome exports into China. And China has no resources, no chrome resources of their own. So for a growing stainless steel industry, call it 3.5% CAGR a year, you know, that equals more chrome units that need to go into that economy. And we understand the constraints in with regards to mining in South Africa. So a really supportive environment for higher prices. And as you say, post our half year, you know, prices up at over $310 per ton, which are historically high prices.
Yeah, and you got what, 288 on average for the period, so still moving higher. And it does seem, and I was digging around this. I mean, this is, you know, so sometimes we see commodities move for all sorts of reasons. Chrome does seem to be a fairly structural move. Yes, there is a good balance between the supply and demand at the moment. But to your point of the 3.5% CAGR growth, it's structurally underpinned. I mean, this isn't a price shooting on shortages. This is just a good old-fashioned demand curve increase.
Absolutely. And what we've seen is new uses and applications for chrome or stainless steel in particular, where it started to eat into galvanized steel. We're starting to see a stainless steel rebar for corrosion resistant buildings and bridges and infrastructure. And this is not only in China per se, but India as well has started to mandate it. Japan, as an example, has changed all their water system piping to stainless steel, which basically is sort of a limitless life because of its corrosion resistance and its durability. So we're seeing these green shoots of demand that are being supported mainly by the growth in capacity in China. And then we mustn't forget the Indian economy, which has the lowest usage per capita of stainless steel in the world and a huge population.
Yeah.
And we're seeing stainless steel growth just from a very low base, but significant increases.
Yeah, and it is. It's that durability. It doesn't corrode. And of course, it is. It is. I want to say infinitely recyclable. Perhaps not quite infinitely, but certainly a lot of it. Let's switch to PGMs. Sure. Basket price down 39.3%, which is, I mean, we all see that. I quote the PGM prices every morning. But you remain profitable even after a significant decrease in the basket price.
Yeah, and I think that really sort of reiterates the co-product business model that we have, where almost the two baskets of goods are counter-cyclical, and we've seen it over time where the one, you know, performs well and the other one's slightly suppressed or even flat pricing, and so supporting each other through the cycles. It's great when both are doing well, but you know, the business really shows its true colors in an environment like this where chrome is up and PGMs are suppressed. And yes, we're still able to generate free cash and profitability.
And there is a sense, and perhaps I'm reading too much between the lines of your presentation, but we heard this from Neil Frontman as well. There's an argument to be said, and I don't want to say that the prices have bottomed, but certainly, I mean, you talk around deficits in PGMs. You talk around recycling as vehicle ownership. I mean, you know, cars are extending up to 14 years of age. There's a, shall we call them, some small green shoots that perhaps is the worst is maybe behind us, even if the best days are still a little way off.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the biggest demand driver for PGMs historically is the auto industry, for catalysis, the internal combustion drivetrain. And what we've seen is a reversion back to the internal combustion engine in terms of sentiment. The physical demand of auto motive sales are up year on year, sort of 92 million vehicles for 23 and showing a similar trend in 24. But the big takeaway is the battery electric vehicle penetration undershooting all analysts. And I think what's happened is the automakers going back to the hybrid drivetrain as the best of both worlds. And we've just come back from Platinum Week and we've spoken to the fabricators. And without exception, all of them have said, you know, the hybrid vehicle as the interim best of both worlds solution is gaining great momentum. And in turn, it's potentially market share that was perceived to have been lost to the electric vehicle penetration is now brought back with the internal combustion engine. And bearing in mind also that these are smaller engines but are requiring more loading of PGMs because a lot of them have cold starts, so they're not running efficiently. So these are the green shoots we're talking about. And then there's this, you know, constant look to the future, to the hydrogen economy and the role it can play in decarbonizing the planet, whether it's from an energy storage perspective or from a fuel cell mobility and transport. We're seeing it already in sustainable aviation fuels being utilized, the maritime industries utilizing ammonia derivative. And all of these, in some shape or form, use PGMs to catalyze water into hydrogen and oxygen. So there are green shoots, and we still remain confident, and we look through the cycle, hence our investment into new projects, and we see the benefit of these very unique and precious metals in multiple applications going forward.
Yeah, and I take your point. As a miner, cycles are not new to you and your team. This is what commodities is all about. We leave it there. Viewers, Perillus, CEO, Theresa, appreciate the early morning.
Your money gives a damn. If it could protest and sign petitions, your money would. But your money can do more than that. When you invest in Stanlib's infrastructure investment fund, beyond getting solid returns, you are helping to build a more sustainable future through job creation and positive economic growth. Damn right you are. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Renzo McKenzie, Head of Interest Rate Process at Future Growth Asset Management. Renzo, I appreciate the time. We've got central bankers galore. Our own MPC on Thursday. Next week is the ECB. 11, 12 June is the Federal Reserve. And then the week after that, 20 June, is Bank of England and even the Swiss National Bank. Let's start with our own MPC meeting on Thursday. I mean, inflation's looking better, but my sense is there's practically no chance we're going to see any cutting coming from them.
Thank you for having me on the line, Simon. We definitely agree with that. Domestically, CPI is above the central bank's target, the target being 4.5%, the midpoint of the central bank range.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been fairly sticky above that 4.5% number for quite some time. So our expectation is that the central bank will remain hawkish until they're comfortable that inflation is indeed heading towards 4.5% sustainably. And I think sustainably is the imperative word there. So whilst inflation directionally is heading towards that target, I think for as long as it's above 4.5%, for as long as global central banks, specifically the US Federal Reserve Bank, ECB to some extent remain hawkish, I think we definitely won't have cuts then from the domestic central bank.
I take your point. And you mentioned there, you say target, much as the governor does. He never refers to 3 to 6%. He talks about a 4.5%. And it's that sustainable. You know, if anything, my sense is the risk to our local inflation is probably too higher, which means they are going to tread cautiously.
Yes, definitely, Simon. The domestic CPI risk in our assessment is to the upside. But we've seen the rand heal to some extent. I think that will help inflation moderate somewhat. We've seen crude oil prices as well heal towards about $80 per barrel as well, which will help. But there is this domestic food inflation risk that still lingers. We had a drier than usual February this year. We had less rainfall, and that should impact food prices. We've definitely seen the uptick in maize prices. So there is some risk that comes through from domestic food inflation particularly. And that, in our estimation, does present some upside risk to domestic CPI.
Moving offshore, ECB next week on the 6th of June, which is Thursday. There was a lot of talk at their last meeting that they would potentially start cutting in this June meeting. Do you think that's likely, particularly ahead of the FOMC?
It is possible, Simon. We've definitely seen European CPI reduce somewhat in recent months. Growth, we know, in the euro certainly hasn't been as strong and as resilient as US growth has been as well. So we've definitely seen some divergence between economic conditions, be it growth or CPI, between Europe and the US. And it should allow the ECB, in our estimation, to cut rates ahead of the Federal Reserve Bank, although fairly moderately. So we think June is a live meeting, live in the sense that the governors will be actively voting for some degree of interest rate cuts in our estimation. We think we could get a 25 basis point cut in June, and then very gradually thereafter, one or two more cuts towards the end of the year.
That's another point, perhaps, which is if we go back to the beginning of this year when there were some people expecting cuts in January from the FOMC, when we do start getting the cuts, they're probably also going to perhaps be slower.
Yeah, no, our view is definitely some extent of gradual cuts this year, be it from the ECB or the Fed, but definitely very slow and gradual, and slow and gradual because inflation, both in the euro area, but particularly in the US, remains quite sticky. Whereas those central banks target headline consumer price inflation on a year-on-year basis to be at around 2%, we've seen a stickiness of those inflation prints in recent times between 3 and 4%. In the US as well, base effects from inflation a year ago should also stop being helpful to seeing inflation roll over as well. So we definitely think we're in for a bumpy ride into the tail end of this year. And by consequence, while central banks do want to cut interest rates and help stabilize growth, I think there's definite concern here that inflation is sticky and not heading towards those 2% targets as quickly as central banks would like. So we think central banks want to cut, but there's risk, of course, to inflation being sticky and them not cutting as quickly and as much as they otherwise might have.
I take the point. And that's very much the FOMC, which is the meeting 11, 12 June. And if you look at CPI, and I know that they prefer the PCE metric, but even if you look at that, it's kind of got a little bit stuck. The PCE is fairly close to that sub 3%. But my sense is they're probably also going to be pausing and not making any changes at their meeting in June.
Yeah, we think the Fed are not ready to cut quite yet. As you say, that PC inflation print, whilst it has moderated, does remain fairly comfortably above that 2% target. And again, central bankers need and want to be convinced that inflation is healing sustainably. And I think there's still question marks around that in the US. So in our estimation, the Fed meeting in June won't be live. We still think there's scope for a cut or two this year, mm-hmm. but certainly in our estimation, not as soon as June in the US. So,
yeah, and again, you use that word. It's about the sustainable, and that's what we need to see. We'll leave it there. Rinzam Kanzi, Head of Interest Rate Process, Future Growth Asset Management. Appreciate the time.
What's your take on when we start to see some cuts? Have your vote and say on LinkedIn and Twitter. Renzo says ECB, but not really the rest. We're going to have to wait a while still. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a rating and review in the podcatcher of choice, and we'll chat again Thursday in video results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.